From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Ooh, hey there, children of the night. Welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says the little thing that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cursed, not cursed, heartthrob of Bob After Dark, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
How's it going there, Bob?
Oh, it goes. How are you?
Bob, I'm doing all right, Bob. I can't really complain. Another week here at the old Stracavantil Studios for Bob After Dark as we get rolling on what appears to be an exciting episode, already shaping up to be an exciting episode.
You are such a good hype man.
I like to hype up the show a little bit before it starts. Get people in the mood, you know, set some candles maybe. Turn the lights down a little bit.
Pour
get people
hot,
talking.
Pour a hot bubble bath.
A hot bubble bath, yeah. A hot bubble bath might be in quite the atmosphere for tonight's show indeed. But happy once again to be here with you, Bob, as always. So here we are, Bob After Dark, where we usually get our sharing done right now at the beginning. That's why
I always take it to you
but
first.
See, here's the thing, Bob. We don't talk about this. I'm sharing to our page as well. So it's we're both sharing at the same time. There's a lot of sharing going
There's
on
lots
here.
Of sharing. You guys, you know, the viewers at home should be sharing as well. If we get if we can get up to 50 viewers at once tonight, I'd really appreciate that. So get those shares in, guys. Click share on the video here, because I want to get some views in, so get some shares. Know what I mean? Count Bank, let me get your weekend update, bud.
Yeah, the weekend was good. You know, as when we last left me, I just got an iPhone, so I've been kind of playing around with that
Do you have a reason to have a cell phone? Aren't you like...
Well, you know, vampires, they at times need cell phones. It's the modern age. It's 2020, Bob. It's not like we live in the shadows anymore. We're out and about walking around freely amongst other people. I'm tired of the misconceptions about people like us.
What's people like you, huh?
That we just hang out in the dark all the time.
That's fair. Did you do anything exciting this weekend?
This weekend? Nah, not really.
No.
How about you?
No. It's been a very long, strenuous weekend, to be completely honest with you, and it just feels good to be back here at the studio and hanging out with you and doing the show. I do got to start this week off with a little bit saddening news. Anthony, due to some personal stuff going on right now, Anthony is going to be taking a little bit of a sabbatical with Bob After Dark. He just hasn't been feeling very well lately, and he's got to take care of some just himself. So our hearts do go out to Anthony, and we will miss him here on the show for the moment. It isn't goodbye by any means. Anthony can't survive without being, you know, on the show. But Anthony just needs to take it easy for a little bit, and our hearts go out to him, and we really miss him. So
sometimes you got to take care of business first here, Bob.
Exactly. But we are in the line of show business. So what is the famous line in show business there, Count Panic?
Show must go on.
Absolutely.
Who said that?
I don't know.
Bugs Bunny, right?
Sure. And to quote Bugs Bunny, the show must go on. So I'm going to have an empty chair for an unseeable future for the moment. But who knows? Maybe we'll get some guests, fancy guest co-hosts, book some guests. You and I, when we first started Bob After Dark, we ran the show by ourselves with Steve would pop in on a month, but we ran the show. So, and nothing changes, and we're going to have to, we keep on keeping on here at Bob After Dark. But
I mean, if something happened to you, Bob, we would have to get a host with the name Bob, right?
Well, no, because I would just kill you if you decided to replace me and change the name of the show to something
with
else.
With another Bob? How many Bobs are out there in the world that know about the paranormal? Not too many.
My dad, Bob.
Oh, we'll get him.
Bob 1, he's kind of a skeptic.
Yeah. How about, did you ever want to think about bringing him on?
He's a skeptic.
Yeah, but the debate. And,
but he's not like the Patrick skeptic where he's like kind of friendly and debatable about it. My dad's just like, no. But my dad's pretty cool. But he's a skeptic, so they bring him on about the paranormal, and it's not gonna.
Maybe one day.
Someday. He called in, I think, once to congratulate us on our.
A couple times he called in.
He's definitely called in. So there's that. He's there. So no, to be honest, you're not replacing me with another Bob, or I would be very, very disgruntled with you. If you needed to replace me with a host, I will give you a list of people that I will be okay with running my show in my absence. Of one of which is Josh Gates from Expedition Unknown.
Yeah.
Do you know who Josh Gates is?
How about
is?
Baggins?
Zach Baggins or Frodo or Bilbo?
Either one. I don't know. Whatever Baggins wants to show up here.
Zach Baggins. Yeah, that's. If Zach Baggins wants to host Bob After Dark, I'm okay with Zach Baggins hosting Bob After Dark.
How about? I don't want to give him any publicity, so we won't go there.
Who?
Maybe some people with the initials CM.
Punk?
No. Another account?
Oh yeah, no. There's some of the horror hosts in the areas would probably step in and could do it. There's people out there, but I'm gonna be here until I'm dead. It Bob After Dark is my, you know, it's my career path, so it's kind of what I do.
They'll have to take it from your cold dead hands if they want to.
I guess you could say that. I'm not going anywhere, guys, I promise. But we will be missing Anthony for the moment, and I'm thinking about him all the time. And
I gotta say, a couple of people are referencing this in the comments, and there's also something else they do called Panic in the Region, not Cow Panic in the Region. But a couple of people referenced it. I did go in this. Now I don't know how good this is for vampires. I went into one of these chambers, these chiral chambers. Have you tried this, Bob?
What's that?
It's okay. It was at Float 60 in Schererville, Indiana here. People are local to Northwest Indiana. But you go in there and you get in this chamber and they turn the air up in there. It's pretty cold, so they kind of like freeze you out, but it feels good.
Kind of like Demolition Man, the movie in the 90s with Sly.
Sure.
Sloan, you ever see that?
Yeah, that was... Yeah. that fits here.
Did you see anything when you were in those ponds? Because aren't they supposed to like cause hallucinations? No,
for this, my head was above the chamber, so I could see out, but... They have these float tanks as well, and I gotta tell you, Bob, I think you should try one. You know, because you get stressed out from being a paranormal investigator, right?
Yeah.
And you got aches and pains.
I mean, I get aches and pains, yes.
All right, but here's the thing: it's tough to show on video because you gotta be naked in one of those things. So it'll have to be Bob after dark.
That's the top tier Patreon.
That's a unplug, Bob.
That's super unplugged. Y'all have to pay for that. But no, I saw your video on that on Panic in the Region, and I'm tempted to try one.
You should. It's relaxing.
Yeah, my luck, I'd start hallucinating, though, and think something was coming after me.
But that's good. For the line of work you're in, that would be good. It opens up your mind. So maybe something to consider here, Bob.
Maybe not a bad idea.
No.
Yeah. Well, can you hook me up with a discount?
I could probably talk to them, yeah. The Bob After Dark promotion?
The Bob After Dark. Do you have spooky aches and pains? That's how. Wait till I start selling out and getting those corporate sponsorships. Hi, I'm Bob. I host Bob After Dark. Do you have aches and pains? Why not try some Icy Hot Patches?
Icy Hot would be a great sponsor for you as well. Have you reached out to Icy Hot?
I have not. Isn't it ran by Procter & Gamble? I bet I can probably get Procter & Gamble to sponsor me.
Look it up here, because I feel like there's some sponsors that just work for you, Bob. I feel like you'd be an Icy Hot guy, but I never got into Icy Hot, but I'm telling you, these chambers, there's something else. So check it out. I'll have to take you.
I appreciate that. All right, so if this is your first time ever watching Bob After Dark, whether it be live on video here with us in the studio during the live version of Bob After Dark, or if this is your first time ever listening to us in podcast land, how does Bob After Dark work? We cover some spooky, weird news stories of the week. We get hashtag panics take on everything we talk about, because typically Count Panic is not prepped at all for what we're talking about.
Nope.
Nor, I would say, 98.999% of the time, you're not aware of what we're talking about. You learn things, though.
I learn as we go, yeah.
Yule Cat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's what you want out of a show. You want to learn.
I appreciate that. It works for me. So, we cover a little bit of news, spooky, weird news stories of the week, and we cover some lore of the week, and we take some phone calls. Our phone lines are open, 219-845-1100. You guys can call us now through the end of the show, or if you're listening to us in podcast land and you want to hear your voice on the podcast itself, 219-845-1100 during the time that we're live. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, make sure you leave us a 5-star review, because we get a chance to read every one of those reviews, and 5 stars always happens to make me a good, happy Bob. And I'm assuming you like to see 5-star reviews too, don't you, Count Panic? Count Panic, do you like seeing 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts?
Yeah, how do I go about that? Just applepodcast.com?
Yeah, you search for Bob After Dark on the Apple Podcasts.
But I can't make a phone call into the podcast, right?
No, but what you can do is call into the live version of the show, and then you can be featured on the podcast.
Wouldn't that be spooky, though, if you listen to the podcast and call it, and then you answer?
That's a bit on the strange side.
Never know.
Now, before we move on, just one quick bit of news. I'm going to be at Anime Milwaukee. They announced my panel time. If you guys are out in the Milwaukee area, the second weekend of February, which would be the 13th, 14th, 15th, weekend of Valentine's Day, I'll be hosting the Bob After Dark Paranormal and You panel with special guest panelist Dr. Ben Vanerson.
Wow. And that's what time?
That is at 8 o'clock p.m. in one of the panel rooms. I don't know it off the top of my head. I'm sure Queen of Night will chime in and be able to give you guys the exact panel room number. But I'll be there at 8 p.m., and that'll be Friday night, which means Saturday night, I am Saturday all day, and then Saturday night, I'm going to be available potential Bob After Dark fan meetup at Anime Milwaukee. Well, maybe we'll do that. And then you and I, in the very least, will be at C2E2 this year. And there's going to be the Bob After Dark fan meetup on Saturday of C2E2 down by the fountains. We did it last year, and it was actually pretty successful. So we're going to be doing that again. So if you guys are in C2E2 Saturday, come see us. We'll be there all weekend, but we're going to be doing a fan meetup.
I'm curious to see if there's still the carpet stain with the wine.
The boxed wine carpet stain. That's a story for an Bob After Dark.
But that was a good time, and we'll be out there a little more this year, too, as well. That was just a one-night thing, so we'll be cruising around the whole couple days.
Yeah, we'll be there all 3 days, and then, like I said, I'll be at Anime Milwaukee all 3 days, and I'll be hosting my panel Friday night, 8 o'clock.
Now, if people want to come to this panel, should they have questions prepared, or what?
Yeah, bring questions, or if you just want to bring yourself and want to come in and chat with me, it's, you know, I like to answer their questions when fans show up and they have questions, comments, concerns. I'll be spinning some local Wisconsin lore, including one of my favorite bits of underlined, not talked about too much lore, the Wisconsin vampire sightings. But we're going to talk about that at the panel. We're not going to talk about it.
They're going to talk about the ghost of the cheese castle.
So remember that bartender told us the place is supposedly haunted.
Yeah. He was there the second time I went back.
He was there the second or third time I went back.
He must be the only bartender at that cheese castle.
Mars Cheese Castle, if you're looking to sponsor a paranormal podcast, Bob After Dark.
We got
to
get him on.
We need to get sponsored by, you know, Mars Cheese Castle.
Yeah.
That'd
be nice.
Yeah. Let's dive right into the spooky news of the week. My first story is coming to us from Unspecified United States of America.
Now, why is it unspecified?
Because they didn't specifically say where it was from.
Okay, that makes sense.
I just know it was an American family. So, let's talk about a haunted doll. Specifically, a haunted Elsa doll. Where, in fact, they couldn't let it go.
Hey, that was good. It took me a while to think about that one.
So, actually, I'm sorry. In a news article, I have it totally written here. Not unspecified America, but in Houston, Texas.
Oh, a little more specified.
Yeah, Houston, Texas. A woman buys her daughter a doll of Elsa from Frozen. And apparently, it wouldn't stop singing, even being switched off, batteries pulled out. And they've seen it not in full animation, but they've seen it moved in different positions around the house from when they left it. the one part the mom said she left it and turned it. She left the room. She was by herself in the house. She turned the doll 180 degrees so it was facing the wall. She came back, and the doll's head was spun 180 degrees facing back out to where it was coming from.
And she's, but she didn't see the head turning, right?
No, she came back and saw the head turned in a full circle. And she started posting photos on the Facebook and different video clips and stuff proving that she was not, you know, there wasn't anybody else in the house, etc. And I mean, it could be one big hoax, but they were saying that they tried throwing this thing away a handful of times and they couldn't get rid of it. So the first time they did, they threw it in the garbage can, like they threw it in a regular garbage bag because they freaked out, obviously. They threw it in a garbage bag, threw it out. The next day, the doll was in their backyard sitting on their park bench, like in the middle of the backyard. The next time they said, someone's screwing around. So they took one bag and they put it into another bag and covered it with garbage. Elsa came out unscathed, completely clean, and wanting to build a snowman. Nah, that was a joke.
I'm trying to
fill as many frozen puns.
I remember the song too, Bob. So, but this thing's not physically seen walking around itself, right? It's moving.
No one's seen it moving around on its own. So no, there's no full animation of said doll.
What if somebody just goofing around though, like just moving it?
I mean, it's plausible, and it could just be one big hoax, man. You know, I hate to play the skeptical card, but I don't know how to put this. It's definitely not out of the realm of possible if a spirit is possessing said inanimate object for the object to then become animated. I've seen plenty of videos before of, you know, dolls, and geez, Anthony's not here to pick on me but I've seen dolls and videos supposedly haunted where they'll move on their own, security cam footage, et cetera, et cetera. So I mean, it's plausible. You hear the horror trope of I tried throwing it away and it came back to me. I can't tell you of a legitimate time I've ever heard that ever being a thing, but now I totally hear it and it's like a thing. So it's very much a possibility it's possessed.
Interesting. Well, is it my take yet or no?
# panic steak.
Oh, this brings us back to the most, you know, this Annabelle craze, right? Everybody loves this Annabelle.
Yes.
And that was based off of Raggedy Ann, right?
Yep, you are correct.
See, I'm dropping some knowledge here.
Now, I'm
Raggedy
proud
Ann,
of you.
When you see Raggedy Ann, it's not really a terrifying doll, right? It's just a little cloth piece of doll, right? Not terrifying. Which I would think that some more so the older models of dolls would be the ones that would be haunted. I never thought, you know, a brand new Disney movie, Frozen, somewhat new movie, that they would have a haunted doll. So that's a little alarming to me, that these spirits don't care who the doll is. They'll go anywhere.
It'll attach to whatever, really. Not every haunted doll is going to look like Annabelle did in the movie, because
it's a terrifying doll
in the movie, but in reality it's just not Raggedy Ann doll.
Yeah.
Robert, considerably probably one of the most haunted dolls in the world. Do you know the story about Robert, the sailor doll from Key West? I think he's in now.
I'm not sure.
That story's horrifying if you get a chance. And I mean, Robert's not gruesome in like appearance. So, I mean, it could just take, you know, spirits want to attach, or demons, whatever, want to attach to something. I don't think they're going to be very biased on what they attach to. It could very well be if you want to go down the realm that this thing isn't haunted, right? And it's just a normal or it is haunted, right? You want to do that. It's very much plausible that whatever was attaching itself to this Elsa doll might have attached itself to the Elsa doll on purpose because it was trying to gain the daughter's trust or trying to gain the daughter's attention. It could be non-malevolent, and 100%. It could have been just past loved one or whatever it might be. I think we got our first caller on the line, so before I jump to the next, our next story, I will take said caller. And Panic saying hello to them right now, waiting for him to switch it over. Okay. Hey, Panic, who do we got?
Hey, we got John on the line.
Wow, John's calling early tonight. Hi,
hey,
John.
Bob.
Hey, John, you're on the air.
Is Anthony over there today?
Just me tonight, John. Anthony is taking a little bit of a sabbatical. He'll be back as soon as he possibly can.
Okay, I didn't know I was just leaving Portage Theater, seeing the count over there a little bit on his part, so I figured I'd call before I get on the road and just say hi to you guys.
Well, thanks for calling in, John. Are you going to be listening to the show on your truck back from Portage?
You know what? I got it on now, but the reception, I got it on the AM. I have to get it on the FM, but the AM is kind of a little in and out.
Sounds good. Well, thank you for calling in, John.
Sure, Bob. Take care.
Appreciate it.
Alrighty.
One of my paranormal colleagues, Jack, just chimed in the chat. He says that the family shipped the El Cidal to Minnesota, which is how the story ends. The family shipped the El Cidal to a friend in Minnesota, and it is now tied to the brush guard of his Jeep. And they're wondering if it will stay remaining attached to this Jeep.
I'm just thinking that.
That's how the story ends.
If you were, I got a question.
Hit me.
If you were going to attach yourself to any doll out there, what would you attach yourself to? Because I would think if I were going to attach myself to a doll, I want it to be like a pretty cool doll. I don't want to be attached to a Furby or anything like that. And there are all haunted Furbies that I heard about too.
Probably something that's familiar. Maybe some kind of stuffed moose with like a red flannel.
How about like not even that? Like it could be a toy, like Mr. Potato Head.
Oh, I had a couple from when I was a kid that I still have. Stanley the Penguin. He's making me sound like the big, bad, not spooky host. But yeah, I mean, Stanley the Penguin or Phil.
I'm just saying, those children's toys are very popular.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess if I'm coming back, I'm trying not to gain the attention of a child. I'm going to try to like get in touch with you and be like, Panic! Panic! There's life after death, Panic!
Like a house plant or something like that?
No. I will be your refrigerator every time, you know, like in Ghostbusters, they open up the fridge and Zool, right? That'd be me. So, I don't know. That's what I would try to attach to.
All right.
My second story comes to us again from Texas.
A lot of Texas stories this week.
This one's not really so much paranormal as it is. I found out about it and I thought it was pretty cool. This year, for the first time ever, the home where the Texas Chainsaw Massacre was filmed, the supposedly haunted location, is going to be not, I mean, it's open to the public normally, but they're opening it to the public and they're marathoning through the movies, all of the movies, one through, geez, when they make like four or five of them, one through the rest, and they're going to have like the live actors go in there and stir up some craziness, and you're supposed to try to remain the night and be afraid. Why I bring that up is because the place is supposedly haunted, and parapsychology teaches you that if you try to stir things up of what would bring about the, you know, spiritual becomings of things that are around, I'm curious what would happen if they stir up anything in that house. Who do we have on the phone there?
We have Pat from Ghostland.
Oh, everybody, we're gained by a very, very impressive human being. We have celebrity on the line. We have Pat, the host of the Ghostly Podcast.
I'm just calling because I heard you say something about skepticism.
Of course you...
my skeptic senses were tingling.
Pat was dozing loungily in his bed when he heard Bob say the word skepticism. Mm. Pat jolted awake, threw his computer on, and he's like, Bob is referencing the skeptic side of things.
Yeah.
Pat is a profound skeptic on his show, but
I want to believe.
You do want to believe.
Yeah.
So what's on your mind about skepticism tonight, Pat?
So I was wondering, if you think that this is real, I mean, what are the chances of it being something that's legit?
We're referring to the El Cidal?
Yes.
I'm going with 60-40. 60% potential haunting, 40% complete hoax.
But if there's 40% that you think it's a hoax, then my thing is that's the easier explanation than to dive into supernatural.
Yes.
You know?
Sure.
So why not take the skeptic side for once?
Because I'm not a skeptic. There are stories that I'm a 100% skeptic on. You and I have conversations about this a lot, Pat, offline, but not everything.
Yeah, that's Bob all day.
not all hauntings we know of that we hear about end up being true. And in Pat's case, none of them end up being true. But
especially the women in white.
No Resurrection Mary believes. No. Resurrection Mary, just one big microclimate.
Yep, exactly.
There are cases that I truly am a skeptic on, Pat. I like to believe that there are certain stories that are. In this case, there are some weird stuff to it, but the fact that they started making the Facebook posts about it and, you know, they started kind of making a skeptical about it online makes me, that leaned me more closer to the 40 and maybe even 50%. But there
was. Everybody wants to be famous, right?
I would say so. That's why I started a podcast.
Yeah, there you go.
Joking. I didn't do this to get into famous.
And I've been
famous.
Listening to your podcast too, and it's phenomenal.
Well, thank you, Pat. I appreciate that. Pat, everybody, if you don't know who Pat is, he hosts the Ghostly Podcast with him and his co-host partner, Rebecca. And they are my favorite podcast in the world, which is a big plug to Pat.
You guys are my favorite podcast.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Pat. That's 100% love. I will be sending your check in the mail. Pat, you guys have a cool public appearance coming up. C2E2 is happening.
Yeah, you're going to be there, right?
We are, so I think we should be teaming up to do a very cool fan meetup between the two of us.
Where you guys can all attack me again?
I didn't attack you last year at C2E2. You tried at the fringe. You tried.
No, you attacked me. You ambushed me.
I did not ambush you. It just kind of happened. And then Southside Podfest, I just happened to cheer on the believing side of things.
Yeah. Well, it was great talking to you. I wish you much success in the podcast world.
Thank you. And you too.
And I'll see you at C2E2.
No, absolutely. All right, everybody. That's Pat from the Ghostly Podcast, always calling in with good support.
Him and your dad should get together.
My dad is more of an, I don't know how to describe my dad's skepticism levels, but you know what? I will give my dad a lot of credit. He supports my show 100% and he supports me on what I do. So good for my dad. So my third, your panic's take on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre house.
You know what? That's a famous one right there. And you know, everybody knows those iconic sites. And I've never been one to want to visit those type of places. I don't want to see where the bad stuff went down. And I, because you never know. We talk about things latching on to you. What if something latched on to me, Bob?
I would save you.
You'd step in?
I'd step in. You think I'm going to let my producer get possessed?
If I start floating around and stuff like that, what happens?
You're a vampire. You should be floating anyway.
I know, but by my own, not my own will, though. You know, if that start happening, then I got to call some backup there.
That story was sent to us by our friend Tiffany in Texas, by the way.
Thank you, Tiffany.
Yes. And then our last one is from another fan by the name of James. Everybody probably knows James from the chats.
Yeah.
James sent this last story to me about this story comes to us from the United States once again. A hairdresser was arrested for making voodoo dolls out of the hair of the people that he was cutting. And he would be using his abilities to make these voodoo dolls, and he would proceed to make threats, and he would proceed to kind of blackmail people into giving him money or we'll just say, favors, quote unquote. And people finally turned him into the police. And apparently where he lived, there is an anti-black magic witchcraft law, and he is going to be spending probably the rest of his life in jail. The victims of his dolls have claimed getting rashes, back pain, random abdominal pain, and, you know, you could be a skeptic on that, I guess, if you want, but I am a 1,000,000% believer in the voodoo hoodoo traditions and their doll making practices. I very much support people believing in what they want, and I'm very much a supporter of people wanting to practice the way they want to. I am a firm believer in not using your gifts and your abilities to for self-gain or for harm. Hopefully one of the witchy community chimes in on that and gives us a call. 219-845-1100. If you are a part of the witchy persuasion and you'd like to chime in on it, you do not need to share your name. Just know that you are in a safe space here with Bob After Dark.
Even if you're the Gary Witch, call in.
Yeah, you could call in to Gary Witch, I promise. But if I support my witchy community 100%. There are some of my biggest supporters on the show. I have a lot of them in my life these days, and I surround myself with that type of crowd. And I have no problem with what they do. I just don't know. I don't know if the man-made law should be stepping in on things like that. It's definitely a odd topic. So if any of my witchy friends would like to chime in, 219-845-1100, you can remain anonymous so you don't have to worry about feeling outed. Just know that whatever you would like to say, you are free to do so, because Bob After Dark is a safe place for anybody, everybody, no matter what religion you choose to practice or so choose to ignore. Hashtag panic steak.
You know, sometimes I think about this, like whenever I have a headache or a stomach ache, is that just me, or is that my body, or is there a voodoo doll out there of me?
Did you anger a voodoo practitioner?
How would I know if they are? Because this was just a person in a salon, right?
Yeah, this was a hairdresser, but he wasn't doing his out of revenge. He was using his for blackmail.
But how do you know if your hairdresser is, she or he is a voodoo mastermind?
I don't get my hair cut, so I couldn't tell you. I can tell you that other people that practice the craft outside of the realm of voodoo and hoodoo, they don't. Normal witches can use hair for a lot of their own practices. And I mean, that tradition dates back thousands of years. You ever hear the old thing where you give a lock of your hair to your loved one? Like, that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's an old witchcraft thing, man.
So all you need is hair for a voodoo doll to have its origin there.
There's a bit more to it, and I'm probably not the person to be revealing those things to the general public.
Okay.
But
some secrets.
There's definitely secrets there. You just, you know, you have to be a part of that culture, which I am not a voodoo priest. I'm an occultist, so I know I'm versed in it. But I just truly believe that people have that right to kind of practice, and I don't know. So if you give a lock of your hair, which, you know, give your lock of your hair to a loved one that's a practicing, that's kind of like it's a trust thing. Does that make sense? So I trust you with my life essence that you can then use to kind of cast a spell or perform negativity on me. I mean, it's a trust thing. Unless your hairdresser happens to be a practitioner and they're coming for you.
Well, I'm going to sit my barber down next time I go in there and have a long, nice talk with him about what's going on. You know, I don't, because I've been feeling, after I leave the shop, I notice my stomach starts to ache a little bit. So I don't know if this is tied into that or not.
I want you to go see your barber and be like, are you a voodoo practitioner?
I'm going to have to. And after this story, I don't trust anybody with my hair now.
Yeah. Just don't cut your hair. That's my goal.
Well, you get your hair trimmed, right?
I haven't had my hair trimmed in a bit.
Yeah, but it'll be down to your
my hair's,
knees at this point.
I haven't had it. We'll talk about that some other time.
Okay. Hair tips with Bob.
Speaking of voodoo, hoodoo, and the craft, I want to talk to you guys about our lore of the week.
Okay.
And I wanted to share a story with you guys from Tennessee. Tennessee. Panic, you're the only 10 I see.
There you go. The old classic line.
I was waiting to use that line.
Gets them every time.
Every time. You're the only person I see in the studio, so I guess you're the only
By
10.
Default,
By
I am.
By default, you're the only 1 through 10 in this room right now. Just like I'm the only 1 through 10 you're seeing. I want to share with you guys one of my favorite American legends, The Curse of the Bell Witch. This story is very old. It's been passed down from generation to generation. And in one family's case, a legitimate curse that lasted from generation to generation until the end of the family line. Let's dive right in. It was the 1800s, a simpler time. Imagine no internet, no phone, just your imagination, booze, and family and friends story time to keep you entertained. But for John Bell and his family of Bells, their simpler time was about to become a more complicated nightmare. The story starts with the Bell family moving from North Carolina to Tennessee. John's a farmer and an elder at his Baptist church. One day, while walking through his land, John came across an odd-looking animal sitting in the middle of a corn row. He noticed it had the body of a dog and the head of a rabbit. Being the good farmer that he was, and he didn't want to take any chances, he probably said something along the lines of, "What is that thing?" And like any good investigator, John decided to pull his firearm on said creature and decided to take pop shots at it. That night, John heard banging noises on the log cabin. Apparently, the kids complained that they were hearing gnawing noises as if rats were in their room, gnawing on their bedposts, or their covers would be pulled out from them from something that was not there. Time went on, and so did the classic signs of a haunting. Whispering voices. Cold spots. Unearthly banging in the house. Apparitions. Strange forms of light. And unfortunately, for the youngest daughter, Betsy, she got the worst end of it. She was being tortured by this haunting. It specifically singled her out. Her hair was pulled. She was being slapped. And the parents were finding large welts and burn marks on her body after she would wake up in the middle of the night with night terrors. These occurrences were supposed to be a family secret. Until John could not take it anymore and wanted an outside opinion to make sure it wasn't just hysteria happening within his family. John Bell reached out to his best friend, James Johnston, and had him stay the night. And he was met with the similar hauntings that were occurring. He got fed up in the middle of the night and he yelled, "In the name of the Lord, who are you and what do you want?" And apparently, the haunting stopped that night. But the spirit became a spectacle. Later that day, when James was finalizing his ideas and thoughts about the day, the spirit started reciting sermons that preachers 13 miles away were saying that day. Word from word. And just like when we were talking about last week with the demon baby of Hull House, word traveled fast about this hyper-intelligent spirit. People would travel far and wide to come see the spirit of the Bell Witch. And people would come, and she would know things only you would know about yourself from your past or your present. And she was very, very blunt about what she was telling you. when eventually the attention was gained by one General Andrew Jackson. Do you know who Andrew Jackson eventually turned out to be?
Who?
The United States President.
That's right.
Andrew Jackson. Andrew Jackson, I guess, was a bit of a paranormal investigator back before it was even a thing.
Yeah.
He heard about the hauntings because John Bell's oldest son served under General Jackson in the Battle of Baton Rouge.
I didn't know. I only knew about Abe Lincoln being a vampire hunter. I didn't know about Andrew Jackson doing the ghost thing.
Well, I mean, there were seances held at the White House during the Lincoln, the Lincoln, you know, presidency, and people say the White House is haunted, but
you would think, man, all the history that place has seen.
But Andrew Jackson said, "Nope, I'm gonna go hunt this thing down," and lo and behold,
yeah, there you have it.
He did,
yeah.
So Andrew Jackson was pulling up to the ranch house when all of a sudden the wagon stopped for no reason and could not be moved. No horse can budge it, and no person can move it. It just stopped dead in its tracks. After several minutes of trying to pull the wagon, Andrew proclaimed out loud it was the works of the, quote, Bell Witch. And supposedly, the party heard a voice speak up that said they can continue and they would be seeing her later that night. And the wagon moved forward. Later that day, when they were conducting basic experiments to try to find out what was happening, a man claimed to be a witch hunter in Andrew Jackson's party, and he pulled out a firearm with a silver bullet and said that he would kill this entity. Well, after he threatened her, story goes that he started contorting in weird ways, felt like his body was on fire, and then seemed like he was getting kicked in his butt out the front door. And the witch proclaimed that somebody else in your party is as foolish as this man. And the team wanted to leave so bad, and Andrew Jackson decided he wanted to stick around to see who the other fool was in the party. I wanted to tell you guys a little bit more about Betsy's unfortunate becomings with the Bell Witch. Because Betsy, other than old John himself, was treated awful by the entity. Betsy, over time, when she grew older, fell in love with a man by the name of Joshua Gardner. And apparently, the entity did not want those two to be together. There's a famous spot in the area where the Bell Witch story happens called the Bell Witch Cave. And the reason why they call the Bell Witch Cave that is because they believe that's where the apparition would kind of come from and go in between her dealings with the Bell family. And Betsy and Joshua would go down and play in the cave, when all of a sudden Joshua would then be taunted by the witch or the spirit. And everywhere that Betsy and Joshua went, it seemed like they were taunted, harassed, or physically harmed during their time together, getting to the point where Betsy broke off the engagement. The entity tormented the family until 1820, when John Bell died of unusual circumstances after he fell into a coma. The family was doing some poking around when they found a small liquid vial in his cupboard. I'm just going to give a quick trigger warning, animal death coming up. They were curious about what this liquid was that they found, so they fed a little droplet to the cat, the house cat, and the house cat died immediately. Apparently, after the cat died, the entity spoke out aloud and said, "I gave old Jack," who she referred John Bell as Jack, "I gave old Jack a dose of that which fixed him." She's referring to the liquid in the vial. The family threw it in the fireplace where it exploded, and fumes and green fire went up the chimney and out the cabin. Now, the story goes that the Bell Witch visited the family less and less, when eventually she came to the widow of John and said that she would come back in 7 years. When she came back, she talked to John Bell Jr. specifically about some of the strangest things you could possibly imagine sitting down and having a conversation about an entity with. This entity talked about the origins and the beginnings of life, early civilizations, Christianity, and the need of a spiritual awakening in the new territories and the new country that was being formed. She also supposedly predicted that the Civil War was going to happen. The last word we hear about the Bell Witch was that she would be back to visit John Bell's last living relative 103 years later to the date, one Dr. Bell, who wrote the story or the book, The Curse of the Bell Witch. Lo and behold, 103 years later, Dr. John Bell, the last living relative of John Bell, died. And that is the last we hear of the Bell Witch of Tennessee.
So for generations, she had a lock on these people. It's something, you know, how they... I tell you what, the Bell Witch, a lot more exciting story than the Gary Witch that just swings around the swing, but... That is spooky.
I have some theories about what this Bell Witch possibly was. I kind of want to hear what your thought is.
What it could be?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I don't know. Well, she had it in, of course, for these people here. So that's one true thing. So you're saying it was some... You're saying there's got to be something behind it.
Well, yeah.
It can't just be this menacing witch here.
So supposedly a clairvoyant calls in. I have a caller calling in. A clairvoyant didn't just call into the house back in the 1800s, but a clairvoyant visited the home and called the spirit a, quote, witch's curse from somebody named Kate. Who do we have on the line?
Oh, that's a James from Peoria on line.
Oh, hey there, James. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, guys. Good night to you.
Now, James, I'm glad you called in now. If you guys don't know, James is an avid fan of Bob After Dark and somebody I bounce ideas off of regularly. James, now, you were telling me you were very excited about this, that I picked this story, and I'm assuming you probably share a love for it as much as I do.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I did quite a bit of research on it. Back in college, I was doing a research paper, and, of course, I picked one of my favorite subjects. I don't even remember what the class was, but I remember doing a research paper on hauntings.
That's fair.
One of the things that has been said in a few of the programs I've seen in this is the father, John, was very abusive to his kids.
Yes.
And not just mentally and physically. Sadly, that was common practice. And one of the theories is the poltergeist that was the Bell Witch wasn't so much an entity in itself, but all that pent-up rage and anger built up from Betsy, who may have had innate psychic abilities.
Yep, and that's a lot of cases with... poltergeist activity turns out not to be a ghost at all, but us creating negative energy in and around us. So yeah, that's definitely a good theory.
Right. And when you consider victims of abuse, not typically they not only, you know, have this hatred and anger for their abuser, also for themselves. So it would kind of make sense that the connection there was the entity, whatever it was very relentless with both of them.
Yes, because the other people in the house were more or less, quote, tormented, or they were victims of the haunting. But John and Betsy were the two biggest in the stories that were very much the that got the worst end of it, you know?
Right.
And the one part of the story that was always strange to me, and the whole self-poltergeist activity always got it the most, was Betsy's relationship with Joshua Gardner. If she is creating this inadvertently to herself, because she possibly grew up in a very abusive home, it's very plausible that Betsy then proceeded to have a self-destructive relationship with Joshua, who was typically probably a really good thing for her.
Right. She would have thought she wasn't good enough for love and affection, so this thing would have fed on that and drove that wedge between them. Absolutely.
Yep. And it doesn't surprise me if they are saying that Betsy would have poisoned John when he was at his sickest.
And what better scapegoat than evil spirit?
So where do you buy in on it, James? Do you believe that the Bell family was haunted by a malevolent spirit, ghost, witch, which we're going to get to my theories here in a minute if you got a minute to stay on the line?
I sure do.
Do you believe that they were being haunted by something? Or do you believe that it was poor Betsy's traumatic experiences causing self-poltergeist activity?
I don't know. I'm kind of torn on that, because I would think for the self-inflicted, for it to keep coming back even 103 years later, where would the link be? She would have passed by.
Exactly. Her. And it's strange that to the 103 years, Dr. John Bell, the one that wrote the book many years later, he died the 103 years after that proclamation was made.
Right. Same thing with the sermons that were being said miles away. But I have another bit of a theory on this.
What you got?
Well, in some of my more recent research from my college days, I've read up a little bit on things called guardian demons.
I am aware.
So my thought process is, what if the Bell Witch was a guardian demon, and since Betsy didn't exactly form an exact contract with it, it was just doing whatever it wanted?
It's very plausible, and I actually have a little bit more of a theory with that. I have three theories I want to talk about. My first one is the fact that the idea of this witch's curse from the clairvoyant that called it Kate, and they believe that Kate was some sort of witch neighbor that put a curse on John for some reason. Now, I drew myself to one conclusion that I'm going to play around with for a minute, because it's Bob After Dark and I could totally do that. The story of John seeing the half dog, half rabbit creature in the stalks, and instead of him, whatever, he decided to start taking pop shots at it with his hunting rifle. Is it plausible that maybe Kate, this witch, put a curse on him because he screwed up a transmutation spell that she was working on? Is it potential that it might have been a skinwalker who, as we all know, skinwalkers have their own levels of malevolent abilities that could potentially be what they're being hunted by or haunted by? Curious to pick your brain about that.
I would think if it was something like that, it may have been a messenger of hers that got interrupted on its journey, or it may have even been a pet if it was a witch like that.
Sure. So no skinwalker.
I kind of find that one hard to believe, because I've never heard of, I don't know about you, but I've never heard of skinwalkers acting in such a way, and especially showing the hyper intelligence.
Yeah,
they kind of strike me as more the lower intelligence, where they just appear and eat you.
Sure. Demon.
Demons have been documented doing some weird stuff, including I watched a program, I'm sure you've heard of, A Haunting.
Yes.
And it's a good ghost story. I have a hard time believing some of them because they're just so fantastical. But there was one where they claimed a demon was haunting a house, and it was actually controlling three human spirits to do the haunting, its bidding.
It's very plausible. I wanted to bring up John Bell's widow. And playing into the story that John Bell was an alcoholic and a potential child abuser on Betsy.
Mm-hmm.
Plausible that John Bell's wife made a pact with a demon to get back at John. And if not John's wife, is it plausible that little Betsy Bell made a pact with a demon?
Oh, definitely. And I mean, since his wife didn't have an actual like blood connection for it to speak to her, definitely is some kind of clue. And there again, you know, if it was Betsy, obviously she would just be begging for any kind of help. She wouldn't really know how to control or banish anything she summoned. She may have, you know, summoned it on accident. And if that was the case, you know, hey, I'm here for a party, and, well, I've got you, and I've got your dad, and the angrier you are at your dad, the more fuel I have.
Last story, and this is my last theory. Before John moved to Tennessee, his family was from North Carolina, and he moved from North Carolina to Tennessee, and he bought a ton of acreage. He had a lot of land for a lowly farmer and became an elder in his church. Is it plausible that John made a pact with a deity and the whole cursing of his family lineage is John not paying up to said deity? Because some of these fantastical stories are insane. And I don't know if a lowly demon on any level is able to pull off the things that this Bell Witch supposedly has done. So do you believe it's some sort of demigod that John made a pact with in order to move his family into a better situation? And he did. And I mean, the fact that his little story was then being more or less big news. I mean, Andrew Jackson himself went to go and investigate it. So is it plausible that John Bell went and made a pact with some sort of demigod that's above a demon? And that's why he never paid up, and that's why the cursed lineage happens.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely plausible. Since he sold all of his acreage before he moved, it would also be possible somebody back home in North Carolina cursed him. Maybe they felt they got ripped off, or they missed out on a deal or something like that.
Very much so. I think.
Well, I cursed the name of John Bell sort of thing. You know what I mean?
Very much. So at the end of the day, which way do you stray? Do you think that John Bell and the Bell family were being haunted by some sort of witch spirit, or do you think it's all just a hoax to gain some attention for some reason?
Well, that'd be one heck of a hoax, and I mean, so many witnesses to it. Nowadays, that'd be easy to pull off, but in the 1820s, boy, you'd have to be pretty darn clever. I think it was definitely something.
So, you're buying into it as a total believer on this one.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, James. I appreciate you calling in. James is a paranormal investigator himself, so it's always nice to pick a brain of a fellow investigator when it comes to theories about what exactly some of these cases are. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, James. We appreciate that.
Have a good night.
You too. Count Panic.
Well, these are some good theories here, Bob. I just saw it was some menacing witch, but you guys were going deep into it. This is what you guys do. You break it down for the common folks.
Absolutely. I mean, if, because the Bell Witch is supposedly a witch, right? And it's a spirit of something. I want to explain you how witches work.
They linger on, don't they?
I mean, they do, but do you, you have to understand the immense power that a witch would have in order to pull something like this off and cursing generations. And I mean, like, you would have to be the angriest witch in the world, and you would have to have ties with some legitimately potent, angry, deity-level nonsense things in order to pull this off. That's why I think the name the Bell Witch is only a name only. I don't believe that it's an actual witch causing the hauntings. We have another caller on the line as soon as we get panicked. We got a couple calls this late at night? Man, you guys are great. Who do we have?
We got a couple calls. First, we got Jack on the line.
Jack. Hi, Jack. You're on Bob After Dark.
Hey, Bob. It's me, Jack Blue, on Facebook.
Hi. Hi, Jack. How are you? Jack, for the fans at home that have never heard you before, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Chicago.
Excellent. What's on your mind tonight, Jack?
So I wanted to make a comment real quick on the Bell Witch. So for a lot of the people that are saying that that it isn't that, so the story originates from a newspaper editor named what was his name, Ingram?
Yes.
Correct? Yeah, his name was Martin Ingram. And he wrote it in 1894, so it would have been some decades after the events took place. And he said that he got it from a newspaper, the Saturday Evening Post. And a lot of people, you know, a lot of the skeptics have gone back to find the original article, and they didn't find it. And they're like, oh, well, there you go. You know, he made it all up. But it was an article was actually found just a couple of years ago.
Yes.
I believe it was like 2016. So pretty recent, and they found a reprint of the Saturday Evening Post article in a newspaper called the Green Mountain Freeman, and it was a reprint of the original events. So the story does predate the Martin Ingram writing of the Bell Witch. So, you know, there you go. There is some, you know, whether or not there was an actual Bell Witch, who knows, but it did. It is proof that Martin Ingram did not just make it up. There may have been some fabrication, some sensationalism on his part, but we do know that it did originate before him. So that's pretty interesting. One other thing real quick is that, you know, the Bell Witch made, you know, she was making predictions and,
yes,
and such. And one of the things that she said was that, you know, she talked about a religious, you know, awakening that was to come.
Yep.
Well, during that time, what's interesting was the second in the United States, the second Great Awakening was taking place, a religious revival movement, and a lot of it, if you trace back the second Great Awakening, occurred in Tennessee and Kentucky. Tennessee, obviously, being where the witch originates.
Yep. And not much longer after that, the spiritualism movement became like full force not much longer after that.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, I mean, there's definitely things there, and I don't know how much I buy into the fact that this prediction witch was able to predict things like the Civil War and,
right,
you know, and the origins of creation and this and that. You know, I like to believe in the story. I think it's a really good one. It's one of my absolute favorites. But I don't know. I believe that the. So, do you think the bells were haunted by something, Jack? In your opinion?
You know, I think something was taking place. I don't think it was as sensationalistic as Martin Ingram made it seem, but it does seem like that there was a haunting that was taking place. Family was haunted, and a lot of people, you know, were there to witness it.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Jack. We appreciate you. We'll have to get you on this.
Thanks, man. I'm a big fan of you guys. I'm a big fan of Count Panic. So thanks, guys.
Comp, you're going to make his head too big to get out of the studio.
I'll be signing autographs in the parking lot following the show. We'll get you.
Thank you so much for calling in, Jack. We appreciate you. All right. Who else do we have on the line?
And next up, we have Aaron on the line.
Aaron, you're on the line.
I am on the the line.
Hello, Aaron. Where are you calling from?
I am calling from Milford, Pennsylvania.
Ah, well, what's on your mind tonight, Aaron?
So I'm here to throw a wrench into everything.
All right, let's hear your wrench.
All right. So, we're dealing with a time where, like, mental health is, like, not really discussed and not really a thing. And we've already established that the father of this family is an alcoholic.
Supposedly. We don't know.
But, I mean, we're also dealing with a time where, like, people were prescribed wine, whiskey, and cocaine
yep.
as medicinal remedies. So, how much of it is hallucinations from said prescribed remedies? And how much of it is the daughter's mental health state? Because I do definitely think, I'm 50-50, I do definitely think you can attract things to you and manifest things to yourself, especially in when you're a child of abuse or you're a person who is in an abusive relationship.
Yes.
I definitely think that dynamic doesn't help the situation. So if we're going to play, if we're going to feed into the theory that there is a demonic entity involved, and the family dynamic is such where we have an abusive alcoholic father and his children are miserable, I definitely think that a demon would feed on that and a witch would feed on that and use that to her own advantage. But at the same time, coming from like a mental health standpoint, you can definitely get trapped into your own bubble. And especially during that time period, when, I mean, women were institutionalized for having PMS.
Yes.
So how much of the daughter or the wife's testimonies were considered, you know, them being fanatical or hysterical in any sense? You know, I mean, it wasn't, it didn't take a lot in those times for a woman to be considered hysterical. And when you are in an abusive relationship, especially when it's coming from the patriarch of your family, who at the time had say over literally every part of your life, who's to say this wasn't the women playing games on their patriarch who was abusing them?
I am 100% supportive of your theory. I honestly don't have an answer for it. I would say that it's very plausible. I would say that that is a very good idea, and it's a very good explanation for what's going on. And as far as rational thought and skepticism, that's a very good way of looking at it. I wouldn't consider what you said a wrench at all as a just another viewpoint, because there are two sides of the coin. We need skepticism and we need belief, and because one kind of helps the other one function. And in a time, like you said, where mental health is a very much a strange thing, where lobotomies and other nasty business are going on and people are being prescribed cocaine because they were seeing ghosts. I mean, it's very plausible these were hallucinations, and I feel as if that would answer a lot of situations. And even to this day, I feel like a lot of situations with the paranormal, not every ghost sighting is an actual ghost. There's some, a lot of times, a rational thought, and a lot of times I believe mental health does play into it. And in this case, where mental health treatment was a very, I don't want to say,
it was non-existent.
Exactly. Barbaric at most, at best. I would say that that's definitely something to look at. And I definitely think that's a very great point to kind of see it as. So that's, you make a good point.
It's something that I've started doing whenever I hear these things, because I've definitely experienced supernatural things myself, but I've also experienced a lot of like mental health people who have mental health issues that are not addressed at the same time.
Yes.
So I think it's important, like the thing that I want to, the analogy that I use is like, if you watch a scary movie, without the music, it's not as scary. You know what I mean? But if you put that scary movie on, if you watch Jaws on mute, it's not as scary. But when you have Jaws with the building music and the building crescendo, that's what happens. That's what can happen in your mind when you're in an abusive relationship of any sort. You're building this world up in your mind. You're building the situation up in your mind. And just to theorize what these women might have been dealing with at the time, it's very possible that they all could have just been feeding off of each other and created this thing. Or they could have been feeding off of each other and made the whole thing up and blamed it on nothing.
Sure. If I may, the only thing there is, how do you explain the other witnesses not involved with the situation, including former President Andrew Jackson? How do you explain their sightings and their experiences with said entity if there is no entity? That's my only flaw in that, and I wouldn't even call it a flaw. The only counter argument I really have there for your theory you have.
Well, they knew he was coming, right?
Right.
So, was he riding in his own carriage, or was that a carriage that was sent for him?
I don't know.
Yeah, when you don't have every single detail like that, they knew he was coming.
Sure.
So they could have very easily turned around and been like, all right, guys, we got to put on a show.
Right.
Andrew Jackson's coming. It's all theory. It's always
no, and that's good. And I just want to point out that I appreciate it 100%. I need theories like that in order to move my show and my stuff along. I can't have my cake and eat it too. I need an opposing argument there, and logic is a good argument against it. And what you're saying is 100% logical. So I really appreciate you calling in and sharing that with me.
I'm here to be your Spock.
Thank you very much, Aaron. Appreciate your time. All right, Count Panic.
Couple of good insightful calls there, Bob.
I would say so. I appreciate counter arguments. That's skeptics, if you're listening to the show, please, please, please don't hesitate to call in and reach out. Patrick does it to me all the time and underline pokes the bear. So, I mean, so it's okay for skepticism and logic to come into play. 100%. You need that. I need that. I believe every believer needs a little bit of a skeptic, and I believe every believer should have a little bit of skepticism in there. And I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Jack, a local paranormal historian, and not just local. Jack's like a walking encyclopedia on things. That guy blows me out of the water with some of his knowledge. So I appreciate Jack and what he does. We'll have to get him on the show sometime. But, do you have anything you'd like to add to the curse of the Bell Witch?
Well, I think it's going to leave a lot of people thinking tonight as they go to bed. So maybe make their own theories up. And
do you have a theory?
No.
None?
None whatsoever. I just think, I heard some good theories here today, but I'm not going to go deep enough to know what's... I have theories about the Gary Witch, if you want to talk about the Gary Witch. But
haunting or not, Bell Witch, do you believe there was something going on there?
Oh, yeah,
paranormal?
It sounds. Yeah, I usually come out saying all these things are pretty spooky.
I appreciate
I mean, if I can't find holes in the story, how who?
You are the most hopeful believer. You're so great.
I mean, if I find a hole in your story, then maybe, because there were some arguments here made tonight. But this, I mean, fire blazing throughout the chimneys and whatnot, yeah, that doesn't happen just by coincidence. There's got to be something going on over there.
Sure. And I appreciate that, and appreciate the statements.
Yeah.
My belief, closing argument on the curse of the Bell Witch, absolutely. There 90% that there was something paranormal going on there. To the extremes that some of the stories said, I don't know. But I truly believe there was something going on in that house and with that family. That's just a bit too weird in my opinion. So
I want to, as we wind down here, witches, you know, of course you believe in witches, but
it's kind of hard not to. I'm around them.
the only one you don't really believe in is Gary, Indiana witch.
Oh my God.
That's the only one you don't believe
in. If there is practicing witches and believers in the craft in Gary, Indiana, those I believe in, those I'm 100% buying into because I know.
No, the one on the swing set, Bob.
The one on the swing set was a hoax. Because do you want to know what witches wear? Sweaters and dress shirts and slacks.
Bob, but this is the old school mentality coming back now.
Yeah, no. You may get one that wears a hoodie covered in cat fur because her cats are around all the time.
Bring back the witch's hat.
Some wear hats like that just for show. Some wear top hats covered in skeletons and stuff. I mean, it's just a. That Gary Witch video was just a fabricated fun thing.
I can't believe this. Bob After Dark being skeptical here.
Oh, jeez. But I truly believe that something was going on in the bell.
I agree. Yeah.
Any closing words for the fans tonight?
Everybody have a great night. And like I said, develop your own theories at home and tell Bob in the morning what you thought of.
Yep. All right, folks. Thank you so much for watching Bob After Dark. To my mom and dad, I just want to wish you guys good night. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want you to know I want you to have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody, and remember the most important rule of Bob After Dark. The most important rule of Bob After Dark is not all who wander are lost. As above, so below, everybody.
Memoriam Development.